Hello, you are listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves.
You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ, and radio hosts.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third.
If you're tuning in for the first time, welcome. If you're a regular listener to Third Waves, then we have something new and exciting in store for you.
We've switched things up with a new format.
This episode is the first of a series on my half East Asian BFFs.
In it, the lovely Daniela is joined by friends who all share a white and East Asian mixed heritage to talk about what it means to them.
Welcome to my half East Asian BFFs. I'm Daniela. I am half Chinese, half Danish. I am producer at Third. My pronouns are she, her, they.
Hi, I am Joe. I am half Scottish and half Chinese Malay. I'm a junior editor and editorial assistant at Third. So I work with Daniela, my pronouns are they, them. I do a whole host of wonderful, wacky things. I do loads of circus, hoop, contortion. I do art modelling. I never stop.
Zach, welcome. Can you please tell our audience a little bit about you and who you are?
Of course. Hello. I'm Zach. I am half Thai, half English. I was born in Bangkok, but have lived in Britain since I was like 18 months old, something like that. I am a lawyer, which is nowhere near as fun as most other people's jobs around this table. My pronouns are he, his, and I guess that's it.
Yeah. In case he sounds familiar, Zach and Reese are brothers, so you might get confused listening to these episodes who's speaking, but yeah.
There's a reason we're not doing it together.
Yeah, absolutely. We had to keep them apart. Nigel, welcome. Please tell us a little bit about you.
I'm Nigel. I'm 49, nearly 50. I've been living in London my entire life. I was born here, more or less in Wanstead, which is a rarity these days. Most people move to London rather than staying here. I worked in banking for nearly 20 years, and now I'm a rock climbing instructor.
Amazing.
So I've been climbing for over 20 years. And I am half Hong Kong Chinese and half English.
Right. And recently you told me that you were born in Hong... No, sorry, you were... What was it? That, like, Hong Kong was still part of the UK when...
Yes. Yeah, I was born in 74. So handover didn't go through until 97. So
yeah,
for most of my visits to Hong Kong was still British owned.
Yeah. So actually very British.
Yes.
Heritage-wise. Interesting. Let's do a fun question so that our audience can get to know us a bit better. What is your spirit animal?
I actually know the answer already straight off the top of my head.
So love it.
I
go always for know. It.
My spirit animal is a red panda because they are very cute and I like to think I'm very cute. Elusive. And just generally, like, I don't know, to be honest, I don't feel much connection with them. I think they're probably a lot better than I am, but I'd like to aspire to be a red panda.
We respect that.
Yeah, I'm always aiming higher.
Yeah, that really fits. That really, really fits. I think my spirit animal is a seal.
I can really see that for you, actually.
Can you? Yeah. I think I just want to be, like, as good a swimmer as a seal, but, like, instead of aspiring to be a dolphin, which is like way too elegant, like I think I've got more of like a silly side to myself and like, I don't know, just the whole, yeah, I think that's my spirit animal. Even though I was born the year of the snake, and so technically I am obviously always going to be a snake. What about you, Nigel?
Bit of a cliche, I'm afraid. Chinese zodiac, tiger.
Tiger.
It's 74 the year I was born. So it's always kind of identified with that. Good and bad traits, so the arrogance, being but quiet as well, so it doesn't often come through, but it can be. And yeah, don't mess with me.
Nigel is a beast when it comes to climbing as well, so that does make sense.
Quiet but deadly. Are you arrogant?
Can be.
Can you?
Yeah.
I don't know, I've never seen that.
Yeah, I try and keep it hidden, it's not a good trait.
Interesting. How about you, Joe?
Self-aware arrogant person is hard to find.
That's true.
I would be a rat. I think I'm sneaky and I carry diseases. People try to avoid me.
Any other parts that you identify with?
I'm considered a pest. No, I just think rats aren't that bad. I think, you know, rodents in general, they can't help that they're rodents. I think we all just need to learn a bit of tolerance. I like rats. I'm not year of the rat, though. I'm year of the rabbit.
I was going to ask, yeah.
I'm year of the monkey.
Year of the monkey. Yeah.
You? What year are you?
Year of the snake.
Snake,
right. Yeah. But, like, the snake tail, because I was born, like, right at the end of the year.
Does that mean I'm the monkey tail, because I was born at the end of...
It does.
1992. Nice.
Yeah, it does. Cool. Love it. So, a little recap on why we're here and why we're doing this. I am a note taker and I am a documenter of sorts. It's probably linked with just a constant awareness of the fleetingness of attention and just life in general, I guess. I was really moved by the time when we were at that dinner and it was like, suddenly it was just like us half East Asians around the room. I was just like, that was such a new experience and it felt really, yeah, I was really like moved by that. And so I just wanted to create something with you, my half East Asian BFFs in London, like a kind of document maybe, like for us to keep, you know, this kind of audio document that underlines the specificities of our shared culture, which is a kind of third culture, which is something that we celebrate so much at Third Magazine and Third Waves. Yeah. And by third culture, I mean this mixture of like East Asian and sort of, I guess, Northern European heritage. So like, even though our parents are from different parts of East Asia and also different parts of like Northern Europe, but somehow we have resonated in the feeling like there's a huge familiarity and similarity that we share in this kind of mixture. And so, yeah, that's kind of what inspired me to get you guys around this table. So the topic of discussion today is upbringing and the home. I feel like this is like a huge topic, very loaded, potentially traumatic, potentially joyful. Let's see where the conversation goes.
I'm the oldest here, so when I was growing up, which is the late 70s, early 80s, things were considered a little bit different, especially for watch media from back then, especially racial. The way people thought racially was very, very different. So when I grew up, I was the only non-white person on the East End council estate that I grew up on until I was the age of 10. Then a black family moved in, lasted a year and moved away again. At school, I knew one other black person and one Pakistani boy. Everyone else was white. And when I was, I think, 12, another Chinese person moved into the area. They lasted a year and moved away again. So until I was possibly at college, I was pretty much on my own. And I didn't see myself that way because my mum, being English, I saw myself as being English, especially since I wasn't raised learning Chinese culture, learning Chinese language. The only thing I really had any connection with my heritage was Chinese food, which I absolutely love. But I was raised basically white, but not seen that way. So for me, it was very, very different to what you might have experienced later on.
Was it a topic of conversation that ever came up in your family, this dissonance? Did you feel that dissonance and did you talk about it with your family?
Not at all. I think this is about the first time I've actually been having a chance to discuss these issues. My family just kind of tried to protect me from what other people thought and told me to ignore it and just look after myself and stand up for myself. And my dad always insisted that I was Chinese, but that was as far as it went. So it was an interesting upbringing.
I actually felt exactly the same, Nigel, but I think because of where I grew up in Woodford, which is like on the border of London and Essex, and went to school in Chigwell, which is a very white area. There were like a handful of people of colour at my school, but mostly white kids, and all my friends were white. And kind of the same, I don't know, it was weird. I was raised to think I was Thai. I was very much told I was Thai, half English, and was told that. But I suppose as a child, I never really processed what that kind of actually meant. And in my eyes, I think I was always English rather than Thai, even though I said I was Thai, which is kind of strange. And as I'm older and can like kind of process that a bit more, I realised that I do feel way more English than I feel Thai.
Yeah, I used to say English. I just use British.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I always said English for some strange reason. I don't know why. I think my mum's a proud English woman. But no, yeah, even like we're what, 20 years apart in age or something like that?
Yeah.
I had the same experience, definitely. And similarly to you, like didn't have a massive, I don't know, we went to Thailand quite a lot when I was a kid and I knew I was born in Thailand and we ate Thai food at home, but didn't speak the language and didn't have like a massive connection with Thailand. So it was almost kind of like a superficial recognition of being Thai in my identity, I think, rather than actually like feeling it.
Yeah, I would say, again, similar, especially on that account, of a very superficial connection to that culture. I grew up in Horsham, which is a small market town in West Sussex, very middle class and very white. And again, there was a handful of people of colour where I grew up. I would say I did have friends who were of different ethnicities. It was very accepting. Never felt like any kind of... if anything, I was quite proud of the fact that I was not white. I thought it was something interesting about me. And I liked that. I played into it. But it wasn't like a deep understanding or a deep knowledge or respect of the culture. It was very... hey, isn't this such a fun thing about me? And I didn't even actually know that I was, or I didn't really acknowledge the fact that I was Chinese Malay. I always just referred to myself as half Chinese. So yeah, it wasn't really until I moved to London that then I was in a very multicultural area. And then I kind of thought, oh wow, I could actually really connect to this. Still in the process of that, but more to come.
Yeah, still in the process of that, more to come, I think, is like soundtrack of my life in regards to this and also like other parts of my identity. I think, you know, it's an ever evolving thing, really, isn't it? And like these conversations, every time I speak with you guys, I just feel like there are some things that come out and I'm just like, oh, I never thought about that. How I've never thought about that. And like, I think Zach and Nigel, when you were saying about how your family, communicated to you about where you were from, I'm just realizing now that like my mom always referred to me as a Westerner.
Yeah, it's like whichever identity is the most other in your environment, they're like, yeah, that's what you are.
Yeah,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
and it's not like it was never in any kind of like negative way, I guess, but she would mark that, like if there was something that I did, an attitude or a thing, or like maybe my physique, like compared to my Chinese school friend peers, I have this like Nordic genetics, and so I'm like, I'm definitely quite like more built than your average 6-year-old Chinese girl. And so like, that would be something that my mom would like point out, like, you know, it's cause you're Danish or like you're a Westerner. Or like, now, you know, when I went to the UK to study, went back to China, she was like, oh, it's because you're a Westerner. Or like, you're such a Westerner. And that was so interesting to me, like now thinking about it, cause if I'm in a fully Western or like fully English, white English environment, I just feel like I'm so Chinese.
Something which I've thought about is, for example, my mum is white and my dad is Asian. And I know in like black families, so there's often this idea that if you have a black mum versus a black dad, there's kind of a difference in upbringing. And I've wondered if it is the same when it transcends to like half Asian people. I don't know if you had any opinions on that.
Yeah, so Nigel, your mum is
my mum thinks she's as well. So yeah, we've all got the same situation.
Like, apart from me, my mum's Chinese. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, yes. My mum is like, sorry, mum, but like, it's kind of, I think you could like stereotypically describe her as like the classic tiger mum situation, like very strict in terms of like what needs to be done in the day, like 3 hours piano practice every single day, can't be missed. Yeah, like a kind of strictness that's really intended to better you, better me as a person, but like strictness all around the house. Yeah. And my dad would be more relaxed, I guess. Although he was like strict with other things, I guess. But yeah, like strictness, I think is, I don't know if like you had a similar strictness from your dad's.
Oh yeah, my dad, which is the Chinese one, was definitely the disciplinarian. So
yeah. More strict.
Back when I was growing up in the '70s, caning was still a thing. So I was caned a lot. In fact, he actually broke two of them on me.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that wasn't excessive, just over time, but you still, yeah.
Wasn't excessive caning, just some...
Just a little caning.
Different generations.
Yeah.
Was your dad also caned by his parents?
Oh, yeah. Much, much more than I was.
Yeah, that's interesting, because my dad was definitely, like, he doesn't talk about his childhood very much, actually, but he has opened up a little bit more over the years recently, and he definitely suffered some sort of, like, physical punishment throughout his life, and... Because of that, I think never really, he like basically never laid a finger on us. Right. And mum used to smack us, less so me because they were older, because I'm the youngest, they were older and I used to just run away and hide. So my two brothers got, I think, like the, they got smacked more often.
I'm the oldest of five, so I took the brunt of it. And the others got less as it went on, especially after I was 16. I told my daddy he was a cunt and all I could remember about him was him beating me as a child. That's, I have a terrible memory. So my main memories of my dad was his punishment, and that was it. I told him that and he stopped. So he hasn't touched any of us since, but
wow,
it took that long.
What age were you when you said that?
I was 16. We were going on a trip towards Hong Kong. So the flight after that was a bit awkward.
And he never laid a finger on you guys after that?
No, not once.
So that's interesting that you had the courage to say that to your
dad. I was just dad. Sick of him being annoying at that stage. I was a 16-year-old, I was being an arsehole.
Interesting, because we, like, I'm terrified of my dad. No, I'm not now, but I was growing up.
And aren't
we all were growing up. Mm. No, if you're listening, Dad, I love you. I'm not scared of you anymore, so watch it. No, like I was. We all were. We were like, my dad, he didn't hit us, but he had like the fury of an angry Chinese man.
Not to be understated.
And yeah, we were scared. And it's interesting that you say about your dad being the disciplinarian, because I'd say my mum disciplined us more on like kind of day-to-day things. She snapped a little bit more easily, I think. But when my dad snapped and lost his temper, it was like, you know, it was real.
You'd know.
It was real. I was never really that, sorry, mum. I was never really that scared of my mum when she lost her temper. But my dad, when he lost his temper, it was like...
I would say, yeah, completely the same for me. And I don't know how much of it is gender and how much of it is, like, the racial aspect.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when me and my dad would get in arguments, it was like, we were both so stubborn that we just wouldn't make eye contact for weeks. He would still be giving me lifts to school and we just wouldn't look at each other. We wouldn't talk to each other. It was, like, the most rancid vibes you could imagine. And I realised... After a while, he would never apologize. And that made me...
My dad has never apologized,
yeah.
Ever.
And that made me resent him. So I would never apologize. So it would just never resolve. And my sister and my mom would beg me, please just say sorry. Please just end this because it's a horrible atmosphere. And I would say no, because I didn't do anything wrong. But I think also there's a thing with Asian parents, often this sense of pride.
Saving face. It's the same thing. It's been that way forever, and you can't lose face ever.
Yeah,
and a grown man losing face by apologising to his children is like that's not a thing. That's never going to happen. My dad used to apologise by like buying stuff for us. I remember him taking us to go and see Lord of the Rings once to apologise for an argument he'd had either with our mum or with us. I didn't really want to go and see it, but I don't know. I was like. Probably 8 or 9 at that point. And even at that age, I was like, oh, okay, this is how he shows that he's sorry. He's never actually going to say the words, I'm sorry, but he'll shower us in, he'll just buy things for us, basically.
Yeah.
It's also how he shows his love.
Yeah, that was completely the same for me. It was like, he just thought if he threw money at me, then that was an expression of love.
Yeah.
And whenever I then came back with anything, like any complaint I had about something he'd done, it was always... Oh, I'm such a terrible father then. I pay for everything. I get you everything you want. Like, very, like, guilt-trippy. And like, oh, well, I've paid for everything, so how can you complain about this one thing that I did, which is completely not relevant to that. I remember the one time he apologized, actually. I was, like, very young, and he came into my room and said sorry to me. And then years later, we were having an argument, and I said, you never apologize anymore. That was the only time you ever did it. And he said, I only apologized because you were so cute.
Pardon?
And now you're not.
I was like, fuck you, I'm 11 years old.
So you're saying I'm not cute anymore? Oh my god, that's so enraging.
I know.
So
I
enraging.
To scream.
I was just thinking, like, one of the cultural differences in my family around, like, disciplining your child. I just remember this instance, and I wonder if you guys resonate to this, but, like, I think in Chinese culture, there is this phrase which is, like, 人前不教子, which is, like, you don't discipline your children in front of strangers. And I think that has something to do with, like, keeping the family business in the family slash also saving face for the kids, maybe. Mm. And I just remember that, like, I learned that phrase one time when my dad told me off or something in front of, like, we had guests at home and my dad was like telling me off. And then I think my mum was kind of saying something along the lines of, like, I don't know if they were having that conversation with each other or, like, she was saying to me, like, oh, he shouldn't have done that, like, in front of someone. Not to say that I shouldn't have been told off, but I think she was like, yeah. And I don't know if you had that, like, did your parents have a different opinion about, like, when to tell you, were you told off in front of strangers? Was there a difference, or, like, were there other aspects of, like, cultural clash between your family, between your parents, in how they approached educating you?
I think my parents are quite similar in terms of discipline, because my dad, as I said, angry Chinese, my mum, angry EastEnder. So, like, I think social etiquette was something they had to learn throughout their lives. Again, I love you. I'm sorry if you're listening. My mum did used to punish us in public, or once punished my oldest brother in public, I think in a department store in, like, M&S or BHS or something. And I think the whole store stopped and looked at her. And from there on in, she never, like, I think she just shouted at my brother. And then, yeah, everyone stopped and looked at her. From there on in, she never did that again in public. My dad, I don't think we were ever out in public with our dad that much, to be honest. I don't think he was backwards in coming forwards if he wanted to tell us off in public, though. I think if we were doing something. But then we kind of knew not to do. I don't know. Maybe we were little angels. I'm not really sure.
Little angels?
No, we definitely weren't little angels. But
certainly not, no.
No.
Yeah, for me, my mum was always shouty if she was angry, but not wouldn't punish us otherwise. But she would say, wait till your dad gets home. He used to work shifts, so he's either asleep during the day or out working. So it was, yeah, wait till your dad gets up or gets in from work and then you'll be dealt with. So,
yeah,
that was always the way it went. So, yeah, and I then pick up my ideas until I got bored of behaving and then misbehaved again. I was a little shit when I was young, so still am occasionally.
So hard to imagine. I feel like I know you quite well, but apparently not.
Yeah, I feel like every notable argument that my parents had with me was always at home. I don't think, yeah, if they were actually, like, going to tell me off about something, it would always be at home. There was never anything very public about it. Then again, like, my family were also very like insular family. We kept to ourselves and everything was dealt with in that way.
Yeah, the same in our house. My dad had some friends when he came over to the UK to study as a psychiatric nurse, and those were friends for life. But he didn't make very many other friends at work otherwise. So those are still his best friends and the only people he ever sees outside of the family.
Yeah.
And that's getting rarer and rarer. And one of them's passed on now, so he's getting even a smaller circle of friends that he has. And my mum's the same. She's just always with the family, so.
Yeah.
Did you say your dad was a psychiatric nurse?
Yeah, that's how he came to the UK when he was 19. He came over to the UK to study as a psychiatric nurse in Horton in Surrey. And then
tough job.
Yes.
Very tough job.
Yeah. And then when he had me, he stopped and started working full plant in Dagenham. So, because nursing wasn't paying the bills. So got a permanent job so he could get a council flat. And that's where we grew up.
Mm. One of the things that I wonder is how having brought up in, like, I would say quite a strict family, like, how that interacts with, like, my relationship to authority, generally speaking, and also obviously, like, Chinese culture is probably, like, quite more hierarchical in how you relate to your elders and that kind of stuff. And I think I definitely respect hierarchy and authority, like whether it's in a workplace or like if in a situation where there's like established, okay, this is what's happening. I will very much be like respectful of the people who have like more expertise or whatever, or like just listen to what they have to say. Not to say that I'm not like a totally judgmental person and will decide afterwards what I'll do with that. But like in this situation, I think I settle into the dynamic, and I often wonder like how much of that is influenced by my upbringing.
Yeah, it's true. In Chinese culture, basically the respect that you are culturally due is determined by when you were born. The oldest people get the most respect, and it doesn't really matter about anything else. However, that's obviously nonsense. You earn respect, you can't be given it. Yeah, so I always grew up with this dichotomy of the traditional Chinese role where you respect all your elders regardless, and getting to know people and deciding for yourself whether they deserve respect or not. And most people, in my opinion, often don't.
That's your arrogance side coming through?
Exactly. but yeah, if people have to earn it, otherwise, what's the point? You can't just live by a set of rules that had its purpose, but is often just a mechanism for controlling people, which was against my upbringing. Even though my dad was very strict, my mum, who raised me most of the time because my dad was working, believed that I should be a more free spirit. So I spent a lot of time out, even at a very young age. You can't do that nowadays. People don't let their kids out of the house a lot of the time. But I was roaming all over East London, around garbage dumps and climbing buildings and everywhere. And as long as I came back and wasn't dead, that was the only rule, pretty much. So as long as I came
back. Just don't die today.
Yeah, just don't die. It's fine. Come back. And that was it.
I think that cultural dissonance existed in my family as well. Like my dad definitely has that idea. So my dad is one of 13 kids, or one of 14 kids. He's got 13 brothers and sisters. Some have died over the years. And not all from the same woman. My granddad had three wives. And he is like the third oldest, I think, but he has so much respect for, well, he did, less so now. He's like become more and more Western over the years. He has been in Britain for like 50 years, I think, nearly 50 years. But growing up, like he had so much respect for his older brother. And like when we went to Thailand, it was always like we had to go visit like the oldest uncle. But I won't get into it, but like there are reasons that I think in an English family, they maybe wouldn't have spoken anymore or would have fallen out, or there would be some sort of distance between them. But despite those things happening, like that level of respect that he had to have for his oldest brother, and that he was like, you know, was innate because of how he was raised, like that lasted for a long time. And then my oldest brother. So as I said earlier, I was born in Thailand. We lived in Thailand for like between three and four years. And my oldest brother's 8 years older than me. So he remembers it quite well. And he definitely has a lot more of a connection with Thai culture and a lot more of Thai culture ingrained in him, because it's like, I think he was between 5 and 9 maybe when we were there, which not like, I mean, they are quite formative years. I think socially they're not massively formative years, but they are like, I don't know, I'm not a child psychologist. But
I'm not a doctor.
But no, he definitely has like a lot of ideas ingrained in him of respect and hierarchy. And growing up, like we did not see eye to eye, because he was always like, you should respect me, I'm your oldest brother. Like, and I was a kid, I was like much younger than him. And I was like, you're my brother, I'm not just going to automatically respect you. Like, where I always saw us as on a level playing field because we're brothers, and he always saw him as like, you know, he was higher up than me in the hierarchy. And that, I think, was because I was way more English as a kid than he was. He had much more of that Thai culture in him. But it caused a lot of problems between us over the years, definitely, because I was just like a mouthy little shit who would always answer back. And he just thought I should, you know my place. And he was always right, basically.
I would say I had a very Western sibling relationship with my sister. I wouldn't say there was anything very... there was no expectation that I was going to respect her any more than I would in any other circumstance just because she was older. In many ways, like, we sometimes joke about how I'm the older sibling. It's just a bit of a mess. Sorry, Laura.
So many apologies to family members.
I am so sorry. She's fine. She knows. But she's like, she was more like the younger sibling in many respects. There wasn't really that element of age having a real influence on a relationship. I would say the main thing it taught me about authority was just to be very private. I think my relationship with my parents, I learned to just not tell them anything to quite an extreme level, and I became very good at lying. I remember, like, for example, my parents wouldn't have wanted me to be taking antidepressants. They still don't know that I take antidepressants. But they wouldn't have wanted me to when I was 17 or so. But I knew that they would see the boxes if I put them in the bins. So I would gather them all up under my bed and then put them in my bag and throw them in a public bin. I knew that my mum would go through the bins. Or, for example, I knew that they wouldn't want me going on dates. So if I was going somewhere, I'd say, oh, I'm going to see a friend. And they would say, oh, which friend? And I would work out which friend I was going to see based on how far away they lived so that the miles would match, so that when my dad checked my car mileage, he wouldn't say, where's all your petrol gone? So it was like really like I became very sneaky, basically. I'm a rat. but yeah, I think that's the main thing, because I'm not really like that with anyone I don't consider an authority figure. I try to be very open. But yeah, that's definitely something that's infiltrated my being.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess one of the things that I wonder, like, and it started with like just thoughts about like surnames. So my full name is Daniela Honskov Sun. So Honskov is my dad's surname and Sun is my mom's surname, but like Honskov is my middle name, my surname is Sun. And then, like, you know, when you, like, I don't intend to marry or have children, but then I'm like, if I had children, how many names are they going to have? And like, in what configuration? And are they all going to cram into the surname with my partner's surname? Or like, what if that my partner has a double barrel surname? And then like, obviously just kind of extending this thought, like, I think sitting around, I can't help but think, if any of us had children and like how... There, I feel like, you know, my mum put so much effort into instilling in me and continually like keeping the Chinese culture alive in me. And we talk a lot about Chinese things and whatever, but like, she's kind of like one of my only links to that culture. Obviously, like I grew up in China, but still it gets quite diluted. And I don't speak any Danish because my dad didn't see that that was any point in like, just not a very useful language. And so I don't really identify as being Danish that much. And then it's like, you know, if I had children with someone from a different culture, again, it's like, I feel like kind of like a high achieving pressure to be like, how do you keep these things alive and pass down these like beautiful things about these cultures? Some of them I don't really even have access to. And so that's something that I kind of like have thought about in the past. And yeah, I think as it stands, I don't really want to have children, so don't have to think about it too much anymore. But I wondered if any of you had thought about this at all.
Well, I've decided a long time ago that I was never having children. So I'm nearly 50, don't have children. I have a partner that's like-minded. So yeah, the chances of us having kids is minimal.
Mm.
So yeah, it's not a thing that's really going to happen for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't really want it.
Yeah.
I'm not so selfish. Well, I'm too selfish to have children, and I'm not so selfish that I would inflict children on the world. With a population of 8 billion people, I think we've done enough.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Similar answer. As a gay man, I probably would have to adopt, but I don't really want children. And actually, if I were to adopt, I don't know how I'd approach the cultural question, because the chances of me adopting a half Thai, half English kid are probably quite slim. So...
legally.
Yeah. Yeah,
I would also prefer to never spawn offspring. It's not something I desire.
Not very rat-like of you, I have to say.
Yeah, no, true. Yeah, not very rat-like of me. But yeah, I just can't think of anything worse than being pregnant.
I feel like this is... I find this a bit sad now. It's like we're like a bunch of sterile mules.
Which is a shame. Which is a shame as well, because we have such a diverse gene pool that we would...
It's true.
That we would create beautiful children. What a waste.
Is it linked to the trauma we've grown up with being mixed race, that we don't want to inflict that on on another generation.
I think this is the most telling part of all.
I agree.
On that lovely note. True.
Yeah. Cool. Amazing. Thank you all for that. I don't know where we landed. A bit of a weird place, but yeah. So any listeners out there who is half East Asian, half white, or have a BFF of that ethnic heritage, or have questions or experiences or stories they want to share, feel free to message us. We will be reading out our favorite responses on the bonus episode. So email us at info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three I's, or DM us on Instagram at thirdmagazine, third with three I's.
So I guess no quarter Easter Asian babies are in the pipeline then.
Yeah, it was quite a weird note to end on, but I could, I guess, fully understand in the sense of the way the world is right now and how a lot of people might not feel to necessarily bring new life. But yeah, that seems to be a consistent thing for everyone in that group.
The one thing I was thinking, though, is that I loved having Nigel's perspective on this episode.
Yeah.
Obviously, him just coming from a different generation and kind of, you know, growing up East Asian more in, I think it was the 70s, 80s, right? Mm-hmm. From where we are now, you can really just neglect the difference, but it was really good, I think, just to hear about some of his experiences and to like compare them to, you know, Joe's, Miko's, Daniela's.
Yeah, I think as the population becomes more diverse and our attitudes towards people being of mixed heritage changes and grows and develops, that will change the experience of people growing up who have mixed heritage. And I think then, so some of the experiences that we've been able to kind of get on the mic in this episode will sound completely different to, let's say, someone who's being born and raised right now.
Another really funny but relatable point from the episode was Daniela being called a Westerner by her mum.
Yes, I felt that when she said it, I was like, ooh. But yeah.
Yeah, relatable. Like, maybe we should try, like, start a support group or something,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because can completely relate to that in a very different way. So, yeah.
For what I took from a lot of what everyone has said is there is definitely an overlap with the immigrant experience and the, you know, being a child of an immigrant as well as someone who is of mixed heritage who experiences maybe being in, let's say, the UK and having that heritage experience, but from afar, and also trying to connect to that. So, for example, like you said, being called a Westerner, I've been called a Westerner by very many Nigerians. I'm meant to be going to Nigeria for the first time, and I know that experience is going to be like me being, to a certain extent, an outsider.
I can relate to that in a different way. My mum would sometimes, you know, refer to us as her British children. Mm. But in a, you know, a similar way, I think, to how Daniela's mum was presenting it.
I agree. I think there's a lot of overlap with their child of an immigrant experience as well as someone, you know, who is of mixed heritage. I do think that we often sometimes struggle to really identify but also express the experience or the influence of the various cultures, and also when we do connect, let's say, go to those places of our heritage, feeling like we're not necessarily fully part of it. So there was a lot of conversation about feeling a bit like an outsider, and I think people who are children of immigrants also feel that to an extent as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's that whole thing of like when you go back home, you become British. When you're in Britain, you are wherever your family come from.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, thirdmagazine.co.uk, also with free eyes.
And don't forget to help spread the word. Share the show with a friend, a colleague, your mum, or just rate and review us wherever you're listening. You've been hearing on this show is from our guest Reese's record label Emperor Recordings. If you search them on Instagram, their logo has a dog in it. Follow them and go to their parties.